Hello and welcome to the Revisiting Old Favourites podcast in the Inner Sanctum, where we're continuing our path to Rome with Hilaire Belloc, our pilgrimage to Rome with him. There's also becoming something of a race to Rome, because I didn't realise it would take quite so long to get through this book. Belloc vowed that he would get to Rome on foot, step by step, by the feast of Saints Peter and Paul, which is June the 29th, I believe. Let's look at them. Okay, so what's going on here? Sure, it's June the 29th. I don't know why it's not. Because this has just got Marian feast. It's June the 29th, I'm sure. So we are about 6 weeks or so to get there. we've taken us longer to go page by page than it is to Belloc to take step by step. But we are now, when and truly, making our way down through the Apennines of Italy towards the Eternal City. And here we have Belloc trudging onwards, ever southwards, and ending with a theological digression, as is Belloc's wont. So without any further ado, let's continue on the path to Rome with the indomitable, incomparable Hilaire Belloc. It is the custom of many, when they get over a rudge... Shall I try that again? I think I'll have a quick drink. By the way, it's just water, in case you're wondering about my tripping over my tongue, that it may be caused by fermented and distilled beverages. None has passed my lips today. So it's just ineptitude, not inebriation. Well, I'll try again. The path to Rome continued. It is the custom of many, when they get over a ridge, to begin singing. Nor did I fail, early as was the hour, to sing in passing this the second of my Apennine summits. I sang easily with an open throat everything that I could remember in praise of joy. And I did not spare the choruses of my songs, being even at pains to imitate, when they were double, the various voices of either part. Now, so much of the Englishman was in me that, coming round a corner of rock from which one first sees Beduzzo hanging on its ledge, as you know, and finding round this corner a peasant sitting at his ease, I was ashamed, for I did not like to be overheard singing fantastic songs. But he, used to singing as a solitary pastime, greeted me, and we walked along together, pointing out to each other the glories of the world before us and exulting in the morning. It was his business to show me things and their names, the great mountain of the pilgrimage to the south, the strange rock of Castel Nuovo, in the far haze the plain of Parma, and Tisano and its high hill, the ridge straight before me. He also would tell me the name in Italian of the things to hand, my boots, my staff, my hat, and I told him their names in French, all of which he was eager to learn. We talked of the way people here tilled and owned ground, of the dangers in the hills, and of the happiness of lonely men. But if you ask how we understood each other, I would explain the matter to you. In Italy, in the Apennines of the north, there seemed to be three strata of language. In the valleys, the Italian was pure, resonant, and foreign to me. There dwell the townsmen, and they deal down river with the plains. Halfway up, as at Franghi, at Beduzzo, at Tisano, I began to understand them. They have the nasal N. They clip their words. On the summit, at last, they speak like northerners. And I was easily understood, for they said not vino, but van, not duo, but do, and so forth. They are the Gauls of the hills. I told them so, and they were very pleased. Then I and my peasant parted, but as one should never leave a man without giving him something to show by way of token on the day of judgment, I gave this man a little picture of Milan, and bade him keep it for me. Bade him keep it for my sake. So he went his way and I mine, And the last thing he said to me was about a molinar, but I did not know what that meant. When I had taken a cut down the mountain and discovered a high road at the bottom, I saw that the river before me needed fording, like all the rest. And as my map showed me there was no bridge for many miles down, I cast about to cross directly, if possible, on some man's shoulders. I met an old woman with a heap of grass on her back. I pointed to the river and said, in lingua franca, that I wished to cross. She again used that word molinar, and I had an inkling that it meant miller. I said to myself, where there is a miller, there is a mill. For ubi petrus, ibi ecclesia. Where there's a mill, there is a water. There is water. A mill must have motive power. Therefore, A, I must get near the stream. B, I must look out for the noise and aspect of a mill. I therefore, thanking the grass-bearing woman, went right over the fields till I saw a great, slow mill wheel against a house, and a sad man standing looking at it as though it were the procession of God's providence. He was thinking of many things. I tapped him on the shoulder, whereat he started, and spoke the great word of that valley, molinar. It opened all the gates of his soul. He smiled at me like a man grown young again, and beckoning me to follow, led radiantly up the sluice to where it drew from the river. Here, three men were at work digging a better entry for the water. One was an old, happy man in spectacles, the second a young man with stilts in his hands. The third was very tall and narrow. His face was sad. He was of the kind that endure all things and conquer. I said, molinar? I had found him. To the man who had brought me, I gave 50 cents. And so innocent and good are these people that he said, pourquoi? Or words like it. And I said it was necessary. Then I said to the molinar, quanto? And he, holding up a tall finger, said, una lira. The young man leapt onto his stilts, the molinar stooped down, and I got upon his shoulders. And we all attempted the many streams of the river Parma, in which I think I should by myself have drowned. I say advisedly, I should have been drowned. These upper rivers of the hills run high and low according to storms and to the melting of the snows. The river of Parma, for this torrent at last fed Parma, was higher than the rest. Even the molinar, the god of that valley, had to pick his way carefully, and the young man on stilts had to go before, much higher than mortal men, and up above the water. I could see him as he went, and I could see that, to tell the truth, there was a ford. A rare thing in upper waters, because in the torrent sources of rivers, either the upper waters run over changeless rocks or else over gravel and sand. Now, if they run over rocks, they have their isolated shallow places, which any man may find, and their deep, evident by the still and mysterious surface, where fish go round and round in the hollows. But no true ford continuous from side to side. So it is in Scotland. And if they run over gravel and sand, then with every storm or spate they shift and change. But here by some accident there ran, perhaps a shelf of rock, perhaps a ruin of a Roman bridge, something at least that was deep enough and solid enough to be a true ford. And that we followed. The molinar, even the molinar, was careful of his way. Twice he waited, waist high, while the man on stilts before us suddenly lost ground and plunged to his feet. Once, crossing a small branch, for the river here, like all these rivers, runs in many arms over the dry gravel, it seemed there was no foothold and we had to cast up and down. Whenever we found dry land, I came off the molinar's back to rest him, and when he took the water again, I mounted again. So we passed the many streams, and stood at last on the Tizanian side. Then I gave a lira to the Molinar and his companion on stilts, 50 cents, who said, "What is this for?" And I said, "You also helped." The Molinar then, with gesticulations and expression of the eyes, gave me to understand that for this 50 cents, the stilt man would take me up to Tizzano on the high ridge and show me the path up the ridge. So the stilt man turned to me and said, "Andiamo," which means "allons." But when the Italians say "andiamo," they are less harsh than the northern French, who say "allons." For the northern French have three troubles in the blood. They are fighters. They will forever be seeking the perfect state. And they love furiously. Hence they ferment twice over, like wine subjected to movement and breeding acidity. Therefore is it that when they say "allons," it is harsher than "andiamo." My Italian said to me genially, "Andiamo." The Catholic Church makes men, by which I do not mean boasters and swaggerers, nor bullies, nor ignorant fools, who, finding themselves comfortable, think that their comfort will be a boon to others, and attempt, with singular unsuccess, to force it on the world. But men, human beings, different from the beasts, capable of firmness and discipline and recognition, accepting death, tenacious. Of her effects, the most gracious is the character of the Irish, and of these, Italians. Of such also, some day, she may make soldiers. Have you ever noticed that all the Catholic Church does is thought beautiful and lovable until she comes out into the open, and then suddenly she is found by her enemies, which are seven capital sins and the four sins called to heaven for vengeance, to be hateful and grinding? So it is. And it is the fine irony of her present renovation that those who will forever be lauding her pictures and her saints and her architecture, as we praise things dead, they are the most angered by her appearance on this modern field, all armed, just as she was, with works and art and songs, sometimes superlative, often vulgar. Note you, she is still careless of art or songs, as she has always been. She lays her foundations in something other, which something other, our moderns hate. Yet out of that something other came the art and song of the Middle Ages. And what art or songs have you? She is Europe and all our past. She is returning. Andiamo. Lecter. But Mr., deleted by the censor, does not think so. Auctor. I last saw him supping at the Savoy. Andiamo. All right, a wonderful little theological aside at the end there, full of good things to get our teeth into if we were going to have a long commentary and everything. But as we are taking a long time to get there without too much long commentary, we will desist. But I also love the humour at the end as well. But Mr. and then in parentheses, deleted by the censor. He's unmentionable, whoever he is. But whoever he is has been seen supping at the Savoy. A hotbed of decadence at the time. I won't say, the censor will not permit me to say who used to dine at the Savoy, but it's enough condemnation for the book, for the author. So let's continue next week, and in the words, the recurring refrain of this week's episode on the Path to Rome, andiamo. Or allons, or let's go. And until then, have a great week. Thanks for being a member of the Inner Sanctum. And until we see you again and meet again next week, goodbye and God bless.